Halfway through the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for this Saturday morning, Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to be joined by our good friend, Ben Raby. Ben is the Washington Capitals radio host, and while we might talk a little bit about the Capitals with him through the course of this interview, the reason we really have invited Ben onto the program is to talk about his playoff format suggestion, which would, to some extent, turn the NHL on its ear as they consider potentially a new playoff format. Ben, good morning, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, good to be with you. How are you?
Doing very well, Ben. How about yourself?
Doing well.
That's good. Ben, I must say, I really do enjoy your new playoff format. You wrote a column about it for WTOP.com. We'll tweet out a link to the column so that our audience can read it along for themselves.
That's WTOP, Drew.
Yes, that is WTOP, if you want to do that way as well. Thank you, Ezra. But basically, Ben, if I can summarize your suggestion as best as possible, the NHL scraps the current divisional format and returns to what they would call conference seeding for the postseason, but instead of it being necessarily a 1-8 seed, it's a 1-6 seed with then play-in games for the 7th and 8th spots. Is that a fair summary?
Correct. That's a fair summary. And I think, first of all, I think there is a sense around the league and for folks who follow the NHL and who care about the NHL, there's a sense that the playoff system as it's set up right now is a little bit flawed. And we're seeing that right now with the top-heavy Metropolitan Division and how the format right now could be exposed a little bit come the postseason. So that sort of started the process of, okay, what could we do here? And the thought is, all right, let's go back to the conference format where, yeah, you see the teams just in terms of Eastern and Western Conference. And within that, I sort of piggybacked off an idea that Ken Holland gave to your colleague Gary Lawless a few weeks ago, or even a few months ago already.
Ben, we don't know who that guy is.
Where he suggested a play-in game for 8-9, right, for that last playoff berth, if you will, in each conference. And I sort of piggybacked off that and expanded it a little bit, and I said, you know what, rather than one best of one in each conference, why not have two? Why not have the 7th seed play the 10 and have the 8 play the 9 in a best of one showdown to earn a berth in what we know as the conference quarterfinals? And real quick, fellas, the one knock on perhaps expanding the playoffs or adding best of one play-in games, if you want to call them that, the thought is that you water down the value of the regular season. But what I'd like to think my proposal does is it adds value to the regular season because you're putting more of an emphasis, there's more of a reward for finishing within the top six. Because finishing in the top six now guarantees you a berth in the conference quarterfinals as opposed to having to finish 7th or 8th and having to play in this best of one play-in game, if you will.
Ben, as Drew mentioned, we talked about your proposal on Wednesday's NHL This Week show, and I think it's a great proposal. How seriously do you think the NHL would take your proposal or the idea similar to something like this? Do you think they would strongly consider it?
I'm not going to lie. It's a little radical, just in terms of if you don't have any of these sort of play-in games right now, to all of a sudden tell your players' association, tell your fan bases, we're going to be throwing 4 best-of-one matchups when the postseason begins next year. I can understand the thought that might be a little extreme, but I'm interested. I, to be honest, fellas, I was surprised at the general manager's meetings a few weeks ago. From what I understand, the playoff format, it was maybe acknowledged but not discussed a whole lot, and that actually surprised me. I thought there would have been a little bit more talk out of the GM meetings that at least the format, the way it is now, at the very least, just go back to the old format where it's 1-8, 2-7, 3-6. 4-5, either go back to the conference format or go like 1980s style Patrick division, Smythe division, and just keep it exclusively in your division. What it is now with the wild cards and the crossovers, it's like trying to have the best of all worlds, and you know, clearly it's a little bit flawed right now, but I would love to see if my proposal get picked up, but you know, I acknowledge the fact that it is you know, it's got a few elements that haven't been introduced before, so you know, it is a little out there in that regard.
It's a great idea, though.
Yeah, Ben, you know, and I think it is a good idea because I think oftentimes, you know, we watch the Stanley Cups and the finals or sorry, the playoffs, and by the time you hit the third round, you're kind of like, okay, well, this isn't, you know, the excitement level has decreased because generally you see that in the first couple, specifically usually the second round. So I guess the question would be if something like this was adopted, it would most likely have to be implemented in the AHL prior to, you know, adoption in the NHL, right?
Yeah, that's a fair point. I mean, a lot of what ends up, you know, 3-on-3 overtime, for example, I think that was started in the A before it made the jump to the NHL. So, yeah, maybe they try that out in the American Hockey League first. I'm not sure about arena availability in the American Hockey League and how easily they might be able to pull that off on a tight turnaround. But, the other part of this, too, fellas, is I'd like to think from having, you know, covered the game over the past few years, and particularly here in Washington, where we've seen the Capitals finish with a top seed in their conference and their division, and they've been subject to a few early round upsets. I'm not just saying this because I'm Washington-based, but I feel there also needs to be more of a reward if you win your division or you win your conference over the course of an 82-game grind, an 82-game marathon. It's a very large sample size, and if you finish with one of the top two seeds in your conference, there ought to be a little bit more of a reward or advantage. And I would think that if you are potentially, let's say, the 9 or the 10 seeds pull off an upset in that play-in game, they would then face the higher seeds in the first round. It's potentially a little bit more advantageous to that top seed, not to suggest a 9 or a 10 can't knock off a 1 or a 2, but it's potentially a little bit more advantageous. We saw with the LA Kings as an 8 seed did a few years ago. I mean, once you get in, anything can happen, but to that point, that's why I do feel there needs to be a little bit more of an advantage, more of a reward for the division champions, the top two seeds in the conference, and potentially, if you're playing a slightly weaker opponent, one would think in theory there might be a greater advantage to that too.
So, Ben, what kind of feedback have you received on the proposal?
Quite a bit of positive feedback, to be honest, and I kind of laugh about it because it's something that myself and the Capitals beat reporters have been sort of tossing out. I wouldn't say jokingly, but we've been discussing it throughout the regular season here, and it was only a couple of weeks ago that I finally kind of put it down to paper, and I didn't expect it to necessarily take off the way it did. But the most popular feedback I'm getting is that it's almost unanimous that the current system ought to be changed, and a lot of folks do like this. Some folks say you're watering down the playoffs, but then once you explain it to them again that there's more of an emphasis on finishing in top six. And it also creates a little bit of a race within the race, if you will, because not only do you have teams competing to finish in the top 10 in the conference to guarantee at least a game beyond the regular season, but there's also a race. You know, if you look at the Western Conference standings right now with Calgary, Edmonton, Nashville, St. Louis, they're all in that sort of 5, 6, 7, 8 range. Just imagine it going down the stretch now. If you're those teams, Edmonton, Calgary, Nashville, St. Louis, you're competing really to crack that top six. I mean, there's a consolation prize if you don't crack the top six. You at least get the best of one play-in game, but it sort of does create a little bit of a race within a race, and I think a lot of folks appreciate it, what that could potentially do down the stretch as well.
Ben Raby is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're discussing his proposal to reformat the NHL's playoff system. And, you know, Ben, one of the criticisms I think that the current format gets, or the current NHL playoffs get, is that too many teams maybe make the playoffs. You know, 16 out of 30, soon to be 31 teams make the playoffs. So more than half of the league currently makes the playoffs. What I like under your proposal is that, from my, and this is a bit of a semantic argument, but really I would say really there's 12 teams in your proposal that make the true playoffs, that guarantee themselves a seven game first round series. And then the other teams below them, that sort of the ones in the 7 through 10 range, are more battling for that play-in spot, which wouldn't be what I would describe as a full playoff team just yet, or full playoff team just from the regular season. I like how it puts more of a premium on the 82-game regular season and being one of the top 12 teams in the league through the course of an 82-game regular season.
Absolutely. 6 in each conference. So we're guaranteeing, if you want to use that word, you're guaranteeing 12 teams get a conference quarterfinal series. And then You have another eight teams, four in each conference, that will battle out for the right to earn the final two berths in each conference for that right to have a conference quarterfinal. But, yeah, you're guaranteeing, and next year once we're up to 31 teams, Vegas coming in, we're guaranteeing only 12 out of 31. So, yeah, just we're watering it down at all or, you know, decreasing the value of the regular season. I would certainly disagree with that. And you know, it's interesting I'm talking to you guys in Winnipeg because just picture where your team is right now. And, you know, you got the Dallas Stars and the Vancouver Canucks, some teams that, you know, really at this point, let's be honest, the likelihood of making the postseason is pretty slim. But if you at least had that potential to crack the top 10, or I should say, you know, you are top 10 right now, but the potential to make value of that top 10 spot with at least one you know, play-in game opportunity, I think it keeps more fan bases, more teams engaged down the stretch as well.
Ben, the Washington Capitals have the most points in the league right now with 98, and Andrei Burakovsky is going to return to the lineup tonight. He's missed the last 15 games. Is the biggest advantage the Capitals have right now over the Penguins, is it their health? Because Ron Hainsey's out of the lineup now. They now have, I think, five injured defensemen. How big of an advantage is that right now heading into the playoffs?
It's been a huge advantage. It's been among the reasons why the Capitals are where they are in the standings right now. It's funny. You always acknowledge or you hear teams point out when the injuries mount and when teams are shorthanded down the stretch. It's rare that you hear about the teams that are healthy, and the Capitals, knock on wood right now, even with Burakovsky having missed 15 games. No team has lost fewer man games due to injury this year than the Washington Capitals. It's just north of 40. I mean, it's about 42, 43 man games lost due to injury all year for the Washington Capitals. They have been a healthy bunch, and actually tonight, in Tampa Bay with the return of Burakovsky, it'll be the first time since the Kevin Shattenkirk acquisition just before the trade deadline that you essentially are going to have tonight your, I guess you could say, ideal Capitals lineup. Your top 12 forwards, top six defensemen. If the Capitals are healthy on opening night of the Stanley Cup playoffs, the lineup you're going to see is what you're going to see tonight in Tampa Bay. For the first time since the Shattenkirk deal, they'll have all the pieces in place at the same time. But yeah, I mean, you look around the league, you look at Pittsburgh, you look at Tampa Bay. I mean, what Tampa Bay's doing lately has been very impressive, but golly, they've been a banged up bunch throughout the season, and the Capitals have certainly dodged that one throughout the year, and you know, barring some disaster here over the final few weeks, one would think they'll head into the postseason as one of the healthier teams. Yes.
Ben, one last question about your proposal. If, you know, I was thinking about it, and I'm thinking to myself, the owners love the money. They have to love the idea of having another game to generate revenue. So you have to think from that perspective, it's going to appeal to the ownership who are always looking for ways to kind of increase their revenue.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, funny how that works out, eh? But, yeah, the idea, too, is also national TV would love this. You have a doubleheader on the Tuesday and Wednesday of the opening week of the postseason. You have 7-10 in each conference on the Tuesday. You have 8-9 in each conference on the Wednesday, whether it's the NBC Sports Network in the States or the folks up north, whether TSN or Sportsnet, whoever has the rights these days, they get the ability to air the nationally televised games. So a lot of ratings, I would imagine, a lot of eyeballs on those games. And the other thing real quick is you'd have the 7-8 hosting those best-of-one play-in games, the 7 and 8 seeds in each conference. So they're guaranteed at least one home playoff game with that play-in. And should the 9 or the 10 then, you know, I put this in air quotes, should the 9 or 10 pull off the upset and advance to the conference quarterfinals, the 9 or 10 seed would then have at least two games at home in the conference quarterfinals, in the best-of-7 series in the conference quarterfinals. So essentially, instead of 16 teams potentially benefiting from a home playoff game, could be talking about 17 or 18 or even 19 owners reaping the benefits of at least one home playoff game. And you know that's an easy sell on the owners. The more owners who can reap the benefits of a home playoff gate, which is all profit, as you guys know, yeah, I'm sure they would be on board with that.
Ben Raby is the Washington Capitals radio host. He's the author of this fascinating format change for the NHL playoffs. Ben, we'll keep a close eye on this one, see if it has any traction, but I know that you have three advocates for it here in studio here in Winnipeg.
Well, really appreciate that, fellas. It's been fun to put together and been nice to get some positive feedback, so thank you very much.
Take care, Ben. We'll do it again real soon.
All right, fellas. Thank you.
head to break. When we come back, we'll look at a number of the injuries that are affecting Eastern Conference contenders, and we'll look at the Eastern Conference playoff race.
Ronnie Hainsey's hurting.
Ronnie Hainsey's hurting. A guy who's pretty durable falls victim to the curse of the Penguins defenseman. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
Stamkos has a history of aggressively rehabbing injuries. At this point in time, is that it's highly, highly unlikely that Steven Stamkos would be back in regular season games for the Tampa Bay Lightning. I mean, there's only 3 weeks left. And now, if Tampa keeps winning hockey games and makes the playoffs, well, that opens the door for a different timetable that Stamkos could perhaps be working back to. But the knee injury that he suffered and the surgery that he had was a 4 to 6 month injury. We're right at the 4 month mark right now. So people, a lot of people think he'd be pushing it to try and get back in the regular season.
The Bob father, Bob McKenzie, with an update on Steven Stamkos' health, certainly would be a huge addition for the Lightning as they try desperately to crack the top eight of the NHL's Eastern Conference. Doesn't look likely for the regular season, according to Bob. The Lightning currently sit 1 point behind the Toronto Maple Leafs, tied with the New York Islanders. Basically those three teams, the Lightning, the Islanders, and the Leafs.
Drew, are you looking at an NHL playoff bracket or a March Madness playoff bracket?
No, it's an NHL playoff bracket. Don't worry, I've already looked enough at my March Madness playoff bracket.
I thought you were going over the Wichita State roster there.
No, I'm not. That's going to be a big game tomorrow, the Wichita State versus against my Kentucky Wildcats.
I told you, after you mentioned that I should go in a bracket, I didn't go in Huss's bracket.
Why not?
But I went in a bracket with a coworker.
Okay.
I can't afford Huss's bracket. It's too much money.
It's free.
Exactly. So I went in a bracket at work, and I took Kentucky to win it all.
Well, you should.
So Laura's going to like that.
Laura will certainly like that. She strongly approves of your suggestion.
In previous years, I've mocked you about Kentucky, but you know what?
You could have just said in previous years, I've mocked you. That would have just been a fine
thing. Because that would indicate that it was past.
You know what? That's true. Currently,
I was at your wedding in Kentucky. You know what? I'm going to become a Kentucky fan.
Oh, boy, is he.
Yep, you've converted me. Welcome. I've been converted to Kentuckyism.
Welcome to the big blue nation, my friend.
There's only one problem.
So, like, when do we start eating the fried chicken?
Yeah.
There's only one problem. This is Kentucky now. It's a steep decline now that Ezzie's
joined the team. Yeah. The basketball program collapses into a heap of brown sugar or something.
I think anytime I'm a fan of something that Drew's a fan of, it's just like me like joining the dark side.
Yeah.
That's what's happening here.
It definitely is a dark side. Yeah. I should mention that this segment is brought to you by Keener Jerseys. Keener Jerseys is known as one of the world's best jersey customizers. So if you have a hockey jersey, take it to Keener Jerseys. If you have a basketball jersey, now that Izzy's a big Kentucky fan, maybe he's going to get...
Oh, he's already got three Kentucky jerseys.
Well, yeah. you got to follow Keener on Instagram
because
he had some great St. Patty's Day jerseys.
There you go.
Yeah.
And then you can get your jersey customized at Keener Jerseys, 982 Portage Avenue, corner of Portage and Sherburn.
You could be like Darren Ford,
who
got St. Patrick on his green St. Patrick's Day Jets jersey, and when we were waiting for the elevator, Mark Chipman himself threw it to Darren Ford.
Threw the jersey?
Yeah.
Oh.
Because I believe it was signed, but it was like a custom-made jersey specifically for Darren Ford.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
You learn something new every day, apparently. But anyways, check out Keener Jerseys online at keenerjerseys.com. Eastern Conference playoff race, the race is certainly interesting between the Leafs, the Islanders, and the Lightning, and Thursday was a great day for the Leafs, having defeated the Lightning quite handily after that bad performance against the Florida Panthers the night before.
Not surprising,
and then
though,
the
Drew,
Jets defeat the Islanders as well.
Sorry to cut you off here, but
you're not,
Corey Long was on Wednesday. He covers the Lightning for NHL.com, and he said that he was expecting Stamkos to be back for some regular season games.
Yeah, well,
so I don't know,
because he's on the ice. I mean, he's skating right now.
Don't you want to get him into a few games, though, Drew, before the playoffs?
You have to think that the knee isn't strong enough yet. I think that's got to be the problem. Now, the question is,
you want his first game since November to be the game one of the playoffs?
No, you don't in an ideal world. I'm sure if he was healthy, the Lightning would have him back in the lineup. But you have to think that as he continues to do this rehab, that the knee just isn't strong enough to hold up to the rigors of an NHL game.
I would be shocked if he gets into one or two games.
Would be shocked?
No, I wouldn't be.
Wouldn't be shocked.
I think if you're the Lightning, right, if you're the coaching staff, John Cooper, Rick Bonus, I think you want Stamkos on the ice. And I'm not saying that he has to play necessarily on the top line. Maybe you ease him in, Dave, on the third or fourth line. Mm-hmm. But do you want him going in cold into the playoffs? I think you want to get him a little game action, don't you?
I don't know, but you got to be so careful with rushing him in there. I mean, you don't want to take – I mean, long-term ramifications for,
Right.
For
I mean,
a player,
he is their first, like not first. He is their top player, right? Like they don't
want
to damage that.
And they've just signed him to this long extension. So I mean, the problem is that do you really want to take a chance and risk, you know, the ramifications of a long term injury? I think you just have to be so cautious with a player of his caliber to not allow it, because the fact is, and we've seen it. You know, we're around the teams all the time. These players would play with like one leg if they could. I mean, they'll
the doctors err on the side of
well, they
caution.
Almost
remember
had,
the players don't. Patrice Bergeron played with a few years ago.
Yeah, that's what I mean. And like, and you talk about it, and these guys, and the truth is, half the time they don't even tell the doctors what's really bothering them, anyways, because they don't want to be ruled out of play. Mm-hmm. So all I'm saying is that usually you got to. I would err on the side of caution simply because I suspect many times players will disguise something or put a more positive spin because they're just that desperate to play the games because they want to play. And I get that and I understand that. But I mean, again, you have to look at it from a, I mean, I hate to say it's more of a business perspective, but you have to look at it from as a cold hard fact.
As a long-term investment.
Well, you have an asset and you want to damage the asset for a little bit of short-term gain. And clearly you want to make the playoffs, but I mean, at the same time you've signed, what was he signed for? 7 or 8 years?
Yeah. 8 years, I think.
Yeah. 8 years. So, I mean, and again, I'm not saying that it would necessarily. I'm not a doctor, so I can't say that it would necessarily impact him one way or the other. But I just say I would err on the side of caution.
You're right, though, Dave. They're not going to rush him, and I don't think. Not only are they not going to rush Steven Stamkos, I don't think any team is going to rush any player. It's no different than when Patrick Laine suffered a concussion, right? Mm-hmm. It's no different than Jacob Trouba gets injured in the fight. I mean, they don't rush guys back, regardless of who you are. But especially when you're talking about this type of knee injury, Drew. Mm-hmm. I mean, we know Stamkos has had some injury problems, and that must be a concern for the Lightning. I'm not saying that, you know, they're regretting signing him. I mean, Stamkos is one of the best scorers of the generation, right? But, I mean, you look at the last couple of years.
3 straight years he's had significant injuries where he's missed significant time? You're absolutely right. It's got to be a concern at this point. You know, Stamkos, obviously, he's injured in Tampa still. He's skating, but unlikely to return, as we heard Bob McKenzie say. Pittsburgh's going through a litany of injuries. Carl Hagelin expected to miss a month. Ron Hainsey now out week to week. The fact the Penguins, I mean, they're not going to collapse completely, but they're still holding down second spot in the Metropolitan Division, 1 point behind the Capitals. They have an entire, you know, top six defense on their injured list
right
now.
And they've recalled Derek Pouliot, former first round pick, so he's going to get some opportunity to play. He's played most of the year with Wilkes-Barre in the AHL and he's been pretty good, so he's going to get a good opportunity here. But you're right, Drew, they already have Chris Letang, Trevor Daley, and Olli Maatta out of the lineup, and you know, you look at Brian Rust also out of the lineup. I mean, they have so much depth that they just keep winning, right? But that defense,
didn't Connor Sherry take a puck to the face yesterday?
I think something like that in practice or
no, I think in the game.
Or in the game, pardon me, yeah. They're absolutely beat up. So, I mean, you wonder if that's going to, like, well, we just talked about with
if
Ben.
If Chris Letang is not healthy, guys, that changes everything.
It's somewhat twofold. It's interesting because remember when we were talking about the Penguins making moves and they're like, well, they almost don't need to because when they get these players back and healthy, it's like adding all these players at the deadline that they're part of your organization. So that's one positive for the Penguins. But the other thing, and I was looking at it earlier in the year when I was looking at the Jets injury situation, and I couldn't help but notice that the Washington Capitals had been so injury free. And again, if you can maintain this and get into the playoffs as healthy as they've been, mm-hmm. I mean, that is such a huge benefit to your team because you've got the whole core that's going and again, playing well together and you're having that consistency. You haven't had to mix and match the pieces. Then, of course, the problem is if something goes down, then you've got a problem because, you know, you haven't had to do that replacement. But
well, Pittsburgh could end up playing Columbus in the first round, right?
Yeah.
It's a very good possibility. But if you're not healthy and you don't have all your soldiers, I mean, that Columbus team,
they play
a physical brand of hockey. Yeah. So
absolutely right. The Penguins,
maybe not as physical as they were 3 years ago, but still,
matter.
We know that Brandon Dubinsky is going to be up in Sidney Crosby's face. We know that they're going to go after Crosby and Malkin like they always do, right? So
it'll be very interesting, but the Capitals, as long as they're sort of sitting pretty there, nice and healthy, one of the only teams to be relatively injury-free this season in the NHL and in the Eastern Conference. The United States women's hockey team is in a significant dispute with USA Hockey. The women have announced that they are going to boycott the upcoming Women's World Hockey Championships, which are set to begin in Michigan later on this month. Their attorney is John Langle. He is representing the women. He joins us next on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show for the latest on the battle between the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team and the governing body, USA Hockey. Bound to be an interesting interview. That's coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290. TSN1290.ca.
Hour number three of the Illegal Curve Hockey Show starts now on TSN 1290. Drew Mandel, Dave Minuk, Ezra Ginsberg with you in studio. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and our website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
We're pleased to welcome to the program John Langle. John is a retired attorney, a partner with Ballard Spahr LLP in Philadelphia, Pennsylvania. He's acting as the pro bono representative for the United States Women's Olympic Hockey Team in their dispute with the governing body, USA Hockey. John, good morning, and thank you very much for joining us.
Good morning, Drew. Hour number three. You guys have been hard at work.
Yes. Every Saturday, every Wednesday, we like to bring the latest in the Winnipeg Jets news and the world of hockey to our audience here in Winnipeg. And, John, we do appreciate you joining us to talk about what has really been a forefront issue this week as the United States Women's Olympic Hockey Team, you know, is it fair to categorize this as a dispute with USA Hockey, or is it sort of is it beyond that point now?
Well, a dispute, summarizes it. You always hope that when there's a dispute, you continue to have dialogue. So I hope it never gets beyond that point. But your introduction was correct.
My understanding is that USA Hockey is going to be reaching out to you this coming Monday. Have you heard from USA Hockey at all recently? Has the current stances of both sides, has that changed at all in the last, say, 24 or 48 hours? We know that there's a decent negotiation occurring, at least from the USA Hockey side, in the public realm.
Yeah, so in the last 18 hours, it changed. They had said publicly that for a couple of days that they had reached out to us. They had not, but last night at about 7 o'clock Eastern time, they did reach out to us, and we have scheduled a meeting for Monday.
John, before we get into the negotiation or the crux of the dispute, what is the current state of funding for the women who make up the United States Women's Olympic Hockey Team? Because I think that's sort of it's important to get the background for our audience that might not be fully abreast of the situation before we can discuss the go forward point of view.
Sure. The women, as many Olympic athletes think in terms of four-year cycles. And once every 4 years, there's an Olympics. And in the other 3 years, our women, similar to your women, play in a world championship. We often battle each other for that title. We play in a Four Nations Cup, similar to your women, and we play a couple of other games, again, often against your women, but sometimes against other teams. In the 3.5 years outside of the 6 months before the Olympics, the women receive virtually nothing from USA Hockey. They do receive a stipend from our United States Olympic Committee, as the United States Olympic Committee funds all elite athletes in the United States who are competing in world championships and Olympics.
John, at what point in this process did the U.S. women's hockey players, such as Megan Duggan, Hillary Knight, at what point did they realize that threatening a boycott, it got to this serious and it needed to get to this, and that was a tactic that had to be used?
Yeah, so there's a continuum when you have discussions. When we sat down with the women starting about 15 months ago, we looked at, all the options. And obviously having discussions with the national governing body, USA Hockey, is the preferable route. And we started those discussions first in writing more than a year ago, and then our first meeting was in April of 2016. We continued to have discussions with USA Hockey in October of 2016, along with a group of the players, about nine of them. We met with the USA Hockey leadership, and we actually thought that we had productive discussions. So we weren't thinking about, let's call it, a nuclear option. But then in January, those discussions stalled, and we then met in March. Again, several of the players and my partner, Di Spagnola, and one of our other colleagues met in Denver with the USA Hockey executives again. It became more apparent that we weren't going to get anywhere, and that's when the women began to look at this option more seriously. They had known that it could always come to this, but they embraced the option, spoke to all of the players, and the players embraced the option while we were still hoping that in the week of March 7th we would reach an agreement or make substantial progress. Excuse me. I had to sneeze.
Bless you.
How do you do that when you're on the radio?
We have a button where we can kill our mics if we have to sneeze on air.
Okay. So the week of March 7th, we expected a proposal from USA Hockey. We didn't get it on March 7th. In the 8th, we gave them a proposal. And then on Tuesday of this week, they came back with a proposal that only addressed the 6 months before the Olympics and literally ignored the other 3.5 years. We took that to all of the players, had a conference call with all of the players Tuesday night, and they advised us to move forward and tell USA Hockey they wouldn't be on a plane to go to Plymouth to train, and they, unless we made progress, they wouldn't play in the World Championship. And let me just say that you can imagine that for women who are any athletes who play in three World Championships and an Olympics, the idea that they, as the reigning World Championships champions, would not play was a very, very difficult decision. But they just concluded that they weren't being taken seriously and that the women's program continued to be a stepchild.
John, the current state of affairs with the U.S. women's national hockey team, how important is it in the bigger picture of equality for women and women playing other sports?
It's huge, as you can see by the response of social media and women across this country, and interestingly, even men across this country. The NHL players have supported it. Mike Garuzioni, who may be, you know, the greatest Olympic name in USA ice hockey ever, has tweeted about it and supported it. The U.S. women's soccer players have jumped in. Julie Foudy, who's this generation's version of Billie Jean King. Billie Jean King herself has stepped into it. It's critically important. We've improved dramatically in this country as a result of Title IX with respect to women non-Olympic sports, women collegiate sports, and women Olympic sports. Just look at our basketball teams, our soccer teams. UConn is under Gina Auriemma has just done amazing things. But when it comes to team Olympic sports, other than soccer, we haven't seen this progress, and Cami Granato tried to do this in the year 2000. Many think that she lost her position with the team in 2005 as a result of her being outspoken. And these women have been talking about it, discussing it for a long time, meaning the Megan Duggan, Hillary Knight, Lamoureux twins crew, and they finally reached a point where they thought that they weren't being taken seriously and reached out to us. They want to make a change, not just for themselves, but for the next generation.
And John, you've worked with the national women's team as well, right, in soccer?
The soccer team I represented from January of 1998 till the fall of 2014. So many of the current players I worked with, I negotiated their contracts with U.S. Soccer in 2000, 2005, and 2012.
John Langle is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He's a retired partner with Ballard Spahr LLP in Philadelphia. He's representing the United States Women's Olympic Hockey Team in their dispute with the governing body, USA Hockey.
John, you touched on something earlier about the support that the women's national team seems to be getting from social media. And I think it's interesting because yesterday, I believe your organization released a statement about the statement from USA Hockey, and you said it contained patently false information. Do you think that's simply as a result of, A, obviously part of the negotiations, but B, symptomatic of trying to offset the gains that it seems that you guys are making within the world of social media?
Yeah, I do. I think that that was exactly it. Unfortunately, the it's more brinksmanship on their part right now. Interestingly, they released it after the close of business, our time on the East. They know that my former partner, Dee Spagnola, who is at Ballard Spahr, and I are on the East Coast. They issued a detailed statement. They didn't reach out to us for a couple of days, notwithstanding they're telling the media that they had reached out to us. Fortunately, Ballard Spahr is a national law firm with a great media group and communications department, and Dee and I were able to work with the players, again, through social media, to respond. And responded that it was patently false. And you may have seen that Hillary Knight tweeted after her comment on it was laughing out loud because it is patently false. USA Hockey wants to take credit for what the USOC pays the players, and they pay the players regardless of USA Hockey. Players under our Amateur Sports Act have the right to make a team based on ability. So let's take an individual athlete like Michael Phelps. He gets the same support from the USOC that our players get. A skier, Lindsey Vonn, gets the same support that our athletes get based on ability. Of course, they have to make a team, but if they were not to make a team for some reason other than ability, our Amateur Sports Act gives our athletes a list of player rights, and for for USA Hockey to claim the benefit of the USOC money is just inappropriate, and they need to recognize that their support has only come in 6 months before the Olympics, and maybe it's embarrassing to them. In 2014, it was $1,000 a month. Now, they have tripled that offer recently this week, so it's $3,000 a month. In a four-year cycle, as Hillary has said time and time again, they pay the women essentially $20,000. I am hopeful that we make the necessary progress this week because the women really want to play in their world championship.
Now, John, do you think that it is the social media that's helping to turn the tide? Because from everything, and you're more versed than we are, but from what I've seen online, it really seems that you guys have support from, like you said, it's not just women. It's men, it's women, young and old, and both professional athletes and just your everyday, you know, dads and moms.
Yeah, I do. And, you know, America is made up of very patriotic people. And in their sports worlds, they are patriotic and they love winners. And the phenomena of the women's soccer players was very similar. And trust me, the USA Hockey women make less than the soccer women made in 1998, and the soccer women didn't make a whole lot of money in 1998. We didn't have the social media after the women soccer players won the World Cup, the famous World Cup of 1999. So the women had to do more grassroots work, and I do think the court of public opinion is important. And in 2000, the soccer women told U.S. soccer they wouldn't play in the next Olympics. And they reached out to significant thought leaders, particular women thought leaders in the United States, like Billie Jean King, like Donna Shalala, who is on our USOC board and was our Secretary of Health and Human Services, was the president of the University of Miami, president of Wisconsin, and understood women's sports. And they reached out to people like Hillary Clinton. And that moved the tide. Social media has that effect because it causes someone like Billie Jean King to weigh in and to reach out to Megan Duggan directly. Spanning generations to say, how can I help and support? So social media is a great vehicle if it is factual. And we are dealing with hard facts, and the women are not engaged in hyperbole.
John Langle is our guest on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. He represents the United States women's Olympic hockey team in their dispute with the governing body, USA Hockey. John, it's some of the numbers have been bandied about that the USA Hockey has offered to increase their stipend to $3,000 per player per month over the 6 months prior to the Olympics. Have the women made a tangible counter offer? Have they come to the table with specifics about what they would like to see in a negotiation with USA Hockey? And if so, can you inform our audience about what the U.S. Women's Olympic Hockey Team has specifically asked for?
Yeah. So going back a year, the women did set forth a proposal, we didn't put. And we set forth a proposal for a 4-year contract, for injury protections, for pregnancy disability, for appropriate travel and hotels and training tables and the right number of physical therapists and trainers and coaches, and also a proposal for increased programming. The increased programming idea comes from the women essentially in a non-Olympic year play 9 games, the Four Nations Cup and the World Championships and a couple of other games. Whereas we have under 17 and 18-year-old boys who are fully supported by USA Hockey, who are housed by USA Hockey, who play 50 to 60 games. And in an amateur sports, not national governing body is obligated to grow the sport. For both men and women, for girls and boys, and the emphasis has been on the boys. And it's terrific that we have that kind of support for the boys. We just need to do it for girls and women. So $3.5 million is spent on the boys. We said, okay, you've got this number of boys. You have half the number for women's hockey. And so let's just give us a compensation package of $1.75 million a year. And we didn't put it in pay each player this, but we said, look, that's the number we should be talking about. Yes, on March 8th, we gave them a detailed proposal. They responded to the proposal for the 6 months before the Olympics and ignored the 3.5 years. Their response to the proposal for the 6 months was insufficient, and they're ignoring the other 3.5 years and saying to the women, well, go support yourselves, go have second and third jobs, continue to live with your parents, still be the world's best. Fell on deaf ears with the women. So we have put a proposal for a monthly stipend for the 4 years from USA Hockey, which would add to the USOC direct athlete support.
John, another couple questions for you, if you don't mind. You mentioned the USOC support, and it's sort of important to distinguish between the USOC support, which is the United States Olympic Committee, that's that governing body, and then the USA Hockey governing body. My question is for a skier. You mentioned Lindsey Vonn, I'm not that familiar with the names of the great U.S. skiers, unfortunately. What kind of support do they receive from that governing association, not the USOC, but say USA Skiing? What would they receive in the course of a 4-year Olympic cycle?
So I don't know. The only true comparable on a team basis for us right now is soccer. I am familiar with what the USA basketball players receive, and obviously USA basketball and the NBA are very connected, and it's a very different type of organization, and the women who play for USA basketball are supported terrifically through the connection of the WNBA and the NBA. So this is, for a team sport, a little bit unique, and it is, hockey is one of this country's four major sports. And it's appropriate on a team level when we're competing with in annual world championships for this kind of support. And the USA, the USOC support is at the highest level, $25,000 a year.
John, we'll let you go on this last question. We've, you know, in my in the analysis I've read about this situation, a lot of different commentators have referred to USA Hockey as a quote unquote old boys club. What would you say in response to that?
That they need to be more sensitive to the issues of women in let's call it the workplace. And we need to have more women leaders at the highest level of USA Hockey who become sensitive to what women are doing in the world of sports.
John Langle is a...
I don't disagree with that comment.
You don't disagree with that comment. Okay, good to have that on the record, John. John Langle is a retired partner with Ballard Spahr LLP in Philadelphia. He is an attorney representing the United States Women Olympic Hockey Team on a pro bono basis, I should point out, as well for our audience. John, appreciate your time this morning. Thanks very much for joining us, and best of luck in the continued negotiation, and hopefully this dispute can be resolved in the best interests of the United States Women's Olympic Hockey Team.
Thanks, guys, for having me. I love your webpage. I love what you're doing. I love the Legal Curve. Thank you.
We support the women 100%, John.
Thank you so much.
Take care, John. Thanks very much.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Come back. We'll talk about that interview with John quickly. We got another interview at 11:30. Lots going on here this morning on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show.
Ezra, Dave, and Drew return on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Big thank you to John Langle for joining us to talk about the dispute with the USA Hockey from the Women's Olympic Hockey Team point of view. Really interesting discussion, I thought. And like you said, Dave, you sort of touched on a lot in your comments. The court of public opinion really does seem to fall against the side of USA Hockey. I mean, they're talking about current state, $1,000 for 6 months is what the members of the United States Women's Olympic Hockey Team actually get from USA Hockey in terms of pure financial, you know, a pure paycheck. It's a very low number from my estimation, and this will be a very interesting, this will be very interesting to see how it plays out, because the Women's World Hockey Championships are set to begin in Michigan coming up very soon. And
less than 2 weeks, I believe.
I believe that's correct. And John said that they're going to be meeting on Monday with USA Hockey, and you have to think that if this is going to get resolved, it's going to have to be resolved within the next, you know, 24, 48, 72 hours.
I don't think they have a choice. I think that they know that the tide is turning. It's USA Hockey. I think that ultimately, first of all, it's going to be a huge black mark on them if the women don't participate, number one. And number two,
black mark on USA Hockey.
I want to be clear. And secondly, I think that, as I just touched on now and also with John, I don't think there's any question and again, I'm not saying that social media is always a barometer for what's right and wrong in this world, but from what I'm seeing, the overwhelming support seems to be directed towards the women's position.
Yeah, the fact of the matter is women deserve to make as much money as men. I mean, this isn't 1930. And I think it's interesting because the U.S. women's team has the ability to be trailblazers for other sports, right?
Sure.
And not just in the U.S., in other countries. So, I mean, it's a very admirable fight.
It is a very admirable fight, and I think it's a fight that I think USA Hockey is fighting an uphill battle, and they should acknowledge when their goose is cooked, as the saying goes, and they might want to cut their losses and come to an agreement with the women, who are certainly deserving of more, from my estimation, than what they currently receive from USA Hockey. Again, they receive some amount of money from the United States Olympic Committee, but USA Hockey needs to do more, in my mind, to step up their game, especially if the disparity exists, and it clearly appears too, between, on the developmental side of things, between the U.S. I mean, we know how good the U.S. under 18 national team development program is. A number of the Winnipeg Jets came through that program. Jacob Trouba came through that program. And so the women do need to be on an absolute equal footing when it comes to the development side of the game as well.
Drew, it would be a colossal shame if the U.S. women's national team is not at the World Hockey Championships. It just would. I mean, if you don't include, not, it's not that they wouldn't include the U.S. The U.S. would decide to not participate because of what's going on with USA Hockey.
Go ahead.
Well, I was just going to say, Dave, I mean, it's something that needs to get resolved.
Yeah, and it's interesting because they were even saying that they'd have replacement players. Remember, that was part of their shtick earlier, was that they were like, well, we'll have someone will be representing us, right? And it's like, well, I don't know, because it doesn't seem like you'll have support of anyone other than, like, I don't know where you're going to get these supposed players.
It does sound like the candidates who would be playing for, that the women who make up the U.S. women's hockey team do seem to be a unified front right now. Well, and then the next level
that's
down.
That's my point. Over and yes. above them, they're going to be, like, why would the people who are, in theory, going to be following these guys not want to, like, there's, and the whole point is, your leverage is out the window because you're not incentivizing them with money.
That's right.
Which is realistically, that would be, you know, the impetus to kind of get these people galvanized would be like, okay, well, you're not giving them more money. So what is it that they're going to win and really be kind of scorned by the people that they kind of look up to as idols? I don't see that happening.
Will be interesting to monitor, and we'll keep an eye on it throughout the course of the next 24, 48, 72 hours and provide an update on Wednesday's NHL this week. When we come back, Anthony Sanfilippo joins us from Philadelphia to talk about the Flyers. They're in town on Tuesday to meet the Jets. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290.
You're on the Curve on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290, tsn1290.ca.
Quick change of plans. We're going to have Anthony join us at the final segment of today's show. That's coming up in about 10 or so minutes' time. He ran into a little bit of a conflict. So Anthony will join us in about 10 minutes' time. And don't worry, we will definitely make fun of him and bust on him a little bit for inconveniencing us, because truly it is all about our convenience here on the program. This segment brought to you by Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, officially declared the funniest place in Winnipeg by Illegal Curve Hockey. We do have that power. I didn't know that, but we do have that power. For 30 years, Rumors has been bringing Winnipeg the best in stand-up comedy. To purchase tickets or for a list of performers and showtimes, visit rumorscomedyclub.com. Tonight at Rumors, his final night in town. He's been playing to packed houses and sold-out shows. Dave Hempstead in town. Two shows tonight, 7:15 and 10 p.m. A reminder to get your tickets for Sean Wayans coming at the end of April, and the guys from Super Troopers. Super Troopers 2 is coming out. Kevin Heffernan and Steve Lemmy coming up also at the end of April. Some great acts coming to Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club. Brendan Lemieux, his AHL season was cut short. It was announced earlier this week that he's going to be out for the year. First, we'll hear from Moose head coach Pascal Vincent about Brendan Lemieux.
I think he's been improving consistently throughout the season. In this case, we know what he's capable of. It's bringing all the pieces of the puzzle together, controlling his emotions during the games. He's a person that has a lot of emotion, which is not necessarily a bad thing. I don't say that negatively, but he was improving consistently. His understanding of where he should be on the ice, depending on the position of the puck, was much better. I think early on this season he had trouble to score goals on the power play. He did score a few recently. That's where he's really good at, in front of the net. deflecting pucks. I've seen a consistent improvement all season long.
The numbers for Brendan Lemieux on the year, 61 games played for the Manitoba Moose, 12 goals, 7 assists, 19 points, 130 penalty minutes, which certainly leads the Manitoba Moose. The next, J.C. Lapointe at 114. Disappointing year for Brendan Lemieux, I would suggest, because there's a lot of hope that he'd be able to make the Winnipeg Jets out of training camp. Obviously suffered an injury, I believe, in Vancouver or in Penticton at the Young Stars game. Affected his Jets training camp with the Moose. Maybe any hopes of a late season call-up now affected by his end of season injury with the Moose. Fortunately for us, we have Moose insider Dave Minuk with us here on the show. He actually is such a Moose insider that he has sold his house and now lives inside a hollowed-out Moose, is my understanding. Dave, your assessment on Brendan Lemieux's season. You've seen the Moose more than anyone in the city. You and Mike McIntyre won, too.
We've seen them a lot. He's been okay. I mean, he himself has talked about how he's measured his success, and he says it hasn't necessarily been specifically about points. And, you know, he's not playing on the top two lines for the Moose, although they generally don't reference their lines as such. But he hasn't had the same minutes as some of the other guys. But he has heated up of late. I think he had 3 goals in his last 5 games, playing more of that net front role. He actually, not only does he lead the Moose in penalty minutes, he actually leads the AHL in penalty minutes. Especially recently, he had a couple of 10-minute misconducts, which has a tendency to add to that. So, he's an interesting player, Drew. He's big, he's thick, he's got a really pretty good shot, and he stands in front of the net. Like, his skating is still needs some work, but he needs to keep engaged. And like Coach Vincent said in that interview we had with him yesterday, he needs to maintain his focus. And sometimes he has a tendency to, you know, because he takes that role of kind of agitator, it sometimes takes on a life of its own a little bit with him. But overall, I would say he hasn't been terrible. Like, he hasn't had a terrible season in terms of his development. He hasn't taken a huge stride. But again, because of that kind of early injury, it kind of hurt his chances to really kind of elevate his game with, you know, potentially playing with the Jets.
Dave, this is his first full-time pro year, right? He only played 5 games with the Moose last year. He spent most of the year with the Windsor Spitfires, right? So when you're looking at Brendan Lemieux, and the Jets have high expectations for Brendan Lemieux. Part of that is because he was one of the players in the Evander Kane trade, right? But just because of his lineage, and you can see the upside with Brendan Lemieux's game. And, he might never win a Conn Smythe trophy like his dad. But when you're talking about Brendan Lemieux, Dave's watched him more. I've been to a few Jets games this year, and he does have a lot of upside, in my opinion. Does that mean that he's going to be a second liner? Not necessarily. He could be a third liner. I mean, if you look at Adam Lowry's trajectory, you'd pencil him in as a third or fourth line center, right? So Brendan Lemieux's probably going to project as a third or fourth line guy. But it's unfortunate, like you said, Drew, you know, that he has this injury right now, because the second half of his season has been much better than his first half, right?
Yeah,
Dave, you'd agree with that.
So, yeah, for sure.
Again, you know, it's just a matter of time, in my opinion, before Brendan Lemieux's playing for the Jets.
From your perspective, Dave, another year in the AHL next season, or do you think that he is NHL ready, quote unquote?
You know, it's interesting. He's one of those players that I could see him coming to the NHL and maybe like having the similar sort of trajectory or impact on his career as, you know, like sometimes it takes development, and you want to see a player in the minors because they need that kind of step up to before they can make, you know, from juniors to, you know, pro and then the ultimately
junior,
to the NHL.
NHL, NHL,
right.
Sure.
But I don't know. To answer your question, yes, I believe he does need probably another year in the AHL because
I'm just saying
like there are aspects to his game that he needs to work on. Now, having said that, because he's not Connor and Roslovic, who project high, because I would suggest that he projects more as a fourth line winger, in that sort of agitator role. Because of that, who can potentially stand in front of the net on the power play, but because of that situation, I see him as someone who could potentially play more, you know, with the Jets next year, as opposed to a guy like Connor or Roslovic who need a little more time to develop.
You know, Dave, people talking about, Brendan Lemieux isn't going to be able to take all of these penalties at the NHL level. I mean, I disagree with that. I think that's part of his game. Look at what Matthew Tkachuk is doing for the Calgary Flames in his rookie year. He's got 94 penalty minutes. So I'm not saying that you want Brendan Lemieux in the penalty box every game, but that's part of his game, right?
Like, if that's how he's effective.
He's a Brad Marchand type of agitator, right?
Again,
I'm not saying that he's going to score, 40 goals like Brad Marchand is this year, but I mean, certainly that's part of his game. So you don't want him to lose that edge in his game.
So you would be of the opinion, Dave, if I can sort of summarize what you were saying, that because he projects at the
NHL... You're just not going to acknowledge my point at all.
No, I'm going to acknowledge your point, too. I'm going to acknowledge your point. You'd never... A guy who plays on the edge or plays with a chip on their shoulder, you'd never want that chip to go away entirely because they're not as effective. So
right.
That was your point.
And as far as Buff goes, another guy that takes a lot of penalties... I mean, people talk about, he takes too many penalties and all that. That's a big part of his game. The physical element of his game is what makes Buff, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, you don't like the stick penalties and those minor penalties, especially in the offensive zone or even your own zone. But you don't want to lose that edge because that's what makes Brendan Lemieux effective.
The intimidation edge almost.
Well, yeah, and he scores too. I mean, like Lemieux can score goals, but... That's an element of his game. He separate, the player from the puck. That's how he does it.
So with Connor and Roslovic, who project more as top six guys, and there's top six, top nine guys, and there's not necessarily a spot for them, a ready-made spot for them next season on the Jets, whereas a guy like Lemieux, who projects to be bottom six, mm-hmm. there is more of an opportunity.
Yeah.
So you could see that would be the reason why he might be able to crack the Jets lineup with a good offseason and a good training camp.
Well, I know that everybody wants to see Kyle Connor and Jack Roslovic. But again, come to an AHL game and watch them play and see what they're doing against the AHL talent. And don't get me wrong, they're very exciting players to watch, but they have a lot of development still to go in their game. And part of that development is just aging and the growth you're going to get over a summer.
Putting some weight on.
Yeah, exactly. I was going to say summer of growing and having opportunity to put on weight this summer. That will do wonders for both their games. So... But, when you're talking about guys who you want to see get called up, I mean, again, it's my opinion. I just don't see those as the guys you do because who are they knocking out of the top six right now? Are you taking off Ehlers, Laine, Shifley, Wheeler, Little, Matthew Perreault to replace? Because otherwise, don't bring them up. I mean, again, we're seeing it with Nick Petan. You don't want to waste a player's skill set playing in a role that he's not suitable for. Nick Petan isn't suited to be playing a fourth-line role. He just isn't. So... Personally, I think Nick Petan would have been better served playing with the Manitoba Moose this season because he would have been able to play.
Well, I agree with that.
Like Jack Roslovic and Kyle Connor, they play all aspects of the game. They play 60. They play like the most minutes on the team. They play in all situations. Whether you need to tie the game, whether you need to protect the lead, power play, PK. That's the opportunity you want for young players to develop properly.
Players need to play.
Yeah, I just don't see the value in Nick Petan sitting out 5-6 straight games and then playing. Fourth line minutes and occasionally interspersing that with some power play opportunities. So to me, you throw Nick Petan in on the Moose team, it's a lot different of a Moose team. And you talk about guys growing and gaining chemistry together. There's your situation, Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, Nick Petan. And then you can insert these guys when you have a Brian Little situation or Matthew Perreault isn't going right. Then you can throw them in. And again, I'm not adverse to the idea of kind of getting rid of the whole concept of top six, and thinking about your team as needing a top nine. And then you have Kyle Connor, Jack Roslovic, and Nick Petan. That's quite the third line eventually. But I'm just saying that's something that the organization thinks about from a long-term perspective.
Brendan Lemieux will be certainly a big part. Yeah, sorry?
Just going to say one other thing. The 5 millionth Moose fan. So from 1996 when this team first came to today, they're going to be welcoming their 5 millionth fan tonight against the Rockford IceHogs. So there is something special planned for whomever that fan is. I've got it up on the site, but you can win season tickets for next season. You get to tour the press box. You get to meet Ezzy, I guess. And
are you sure it's a reward or is that a
punishment? No, you get to do the 50. It's just kind of neat. Like, it's kind of neat that there's already been 5 million people. Like, it just goes to show you, sometimes people forget how integral the Manitoba Moose were to this community when the Winnipeg Jets left. But 5 million people have walked through the doors of the MTS Center and the old Winnipeg Arena to support the Manitoba Moose.
Anthony Sanfilippo, hopefully you'll be ready for us. We'll go back to Philly coming up next. You're listening to the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. We're live on TSN 1290. Final segment this Saturday morning. It's brought to you by Bernstein's Deli, official deli of Illegal Curve Hockey and home of the Illegal Curve Sandwich. Located in the Cordon Village Mall, Bernstein's Deli has been Winnipeg's deli destination for nearly 30 years. For more information, find them on Facebook or at bernsteinsdeli.com. And remember, if you're ever looking for a place to watch the big game, Bernstein's Deli has all your big screen TVs, great food, and great drink specials. Tell them Illegal Curve sent you. Bernstein's Deli in the Cordon Village Mall.
Now, let's go live on the Illegal Curve Hockey Show Hotline.
Pleased to welcome back to the program our very good friend, Anthony Sanfilippo. Covers the Philadelphia Flyers and the Philadelphia sports scene for 610 AM in the city of brotherly love. Anthony, the Flyers make their lone visit to Winnipeg this coming Tuesday. A disappointing season for the Flyers, having been a playoff team last year, not a playoff team this year, clearly. Do you expect there to be any changes to the Philadelphia Flyers organization in the offseason as a result of this disappointing year, or are they just going to chalk it up to a bad season?
You know, that's a great question. If I was in charge, there would be wholesale changes. And I would talk. I'm talking about the coach, who I don't think is ready for NHL play. I think after two seasons, we realize that giving it the old college try and bringing a college coach in is not necessarily a successful combination. I'm not happy with the work that Ron Hextall has done as a GM. He's drafted well. He's been able to get rid of a couple of contracts, but he's not brought in any players who are advancing this team. As a matter of fact, if you want to look at the trade deadline, he really got fleeced by Tampa by taking on a contract for a player who is in decline in Valtteri Filppula. Although he did get a draft pick or two out of it as well for trading Mark Streit, the whole reason that he did it was because he didn't want to trade Mark Streit directly to the Pittsburgh Penguins, his most hated rival. Because, you know, the Flyers and Penguins never make trades. And so, heaven forbid we have that happen. So, you know, Ron Hextall deserves a lot of the blame as well. And these players, when it really comes down to it, for Claude Giroux to only have 14 goals this season is an abomination. Really not playing up to his caliber. Jake Voracek really not playing up to his caliber. And then you look at the defense, and your best defenseman is a rookie. And you can tell the last couple of games he's probably hit this rookie wall. He's making uncharacteristic turnovers against Pittsburgh and then New Jersey. And he's probably just worn out, you know, at 18, 19 years old and playing all these minutes and all these games. And they have nothing behind him. And then the goaltending situation is a disaster. I mean, Mason's played okay, but he's a free agent. And they re-signed Neuwehr, and he's been terrible. So it's who knows where this team is, but they're far, much further away now than they were at the end of last season.
Anthony, you mentioned the goaltending situation there, and we last had you on in early February. How surprised were you that they signed Neuwirth to the two-year contract, and what does that mean for the future of Steve Mason and Anthony Stolarz?
Well, that's it. So here's, you know, I'm not 100% sure what their thought process is here, because if the thought process was, let's get him signed, hoping that he gets claimed, or at the very least, you know, they could put him out there for the expansion draft for Las Vegas, whether he gets claimed or not, and allows them to protect Stolarz, which they could not have done if both Neuwehr and Mason went into free agency. So that's the one thing, okay? So that kind of allows them to keep Stolarz. Do they want, Las Vegas to take Neuwehr? I think they do, but the fact remains is that there's going to be other goalies that are out there, and maybe even other goalies with a little bit better of a profile for this expansion team, namely a guy like Marc-Andre Fleury from Pittsburgh, where if he ends up in Vegas, are they going to take Neuwehr as a backup goalie? I don't think that they would, in which case then the Flyers are committed to keeping Neuwehr as one of their two goalies for next year and let Steve Mason walk. And Stolarz is not a number one goalie. He's never going to be a number one goalie in the NHL. There's a reason the Flyers have drafted other young goaltenders, because they don't see number one in Stolarz's future. They think he can probably be a capable NHL backup, but nothing more than that. So they really are in a tough spot with this goaltending situation. And poor Steve Mason is stuck because while he had a bad start to this season, he really kind of turned it around. If you take away his first 8 to 10 starts, he's really, looking at his numbers for the rest of the season, he's really been pretty solid for them. And considering the defensive ineptitude that's on this team, you really got to look at Mason and say, yeah, this guy deserves better. And maybe the Flyers will bring him back if Neuvehr ends up being claimed by Vegas, or if they can work out an off-season trade for somebody to take that contract of Neuvehr, and then they can sign Mason and keep him, maybe. But no one really knows where Ron Hextall's head is on this, and it's kind of disappointing. Because if you're a Flyers fan, you'd like to know, you know, who your key players are at key positions going into the next season, and right now the Flyers fans have no clue.
Anthony, speaking of disappointing, how disappointing was that loss to the Devils? Because they hadn't won a game in their previous 10, and then you were coming into that game having defeated the Pittsburgh Penguins by a score of 4-0. At that point, you're thinking, okay, well, you beat the Devils and we're still in this playoff race. Now it's not looking as good.
No, well, I'll tell you this. I mean, are the hardcore fans disappointed by that showing? Yes, and I guess they should be, because it was an embarrassing performance by the Flyers. You don't lose 6. I mean, you know, teams that are in the midst of 10-game losing streaks like the Devils, they're going to come out and they're going to play hard. You know, they don't want to keep losing. They don't. Nobody, no matter how bad your team is, you don't like to keep losing without a win here and there. And so you knew the Devils were going to come out and play hard. But the disappointing thing for the Flyers is, as you said, at least in their minds, they were still in this playoff race. But here's a dose of reality. This Flyers team was never really still in the playoff race, even after the win against Pittsburgh. And I should point out, the win against Pittsburgh came at the end of a very long trip for the Penguins, minus a couple guys who were hurt or nicked up, playing injured. They had trouble getting into Philadelphia because of the snowstorm that we had. So they didn't get in until really late. It was like a real trouble thing for the Penguins. It was a bad spot for Pittsburgh. So the 4-0 win looks a lot better than it really was. That said, go back over and look at the history. Well, it's not even a long history, but, you know, since we added the shootout and the infamous third point, you know, for shootout losses and overtime losses, how many teams can overcome 5-6 point deficits in the final 20 games of a season? It doesn't happen. I mean, just because the Flyers made this big run at the end of last year to earn a playoff spot doesn't mean that that's always going to be the case. They were really hot at the end of last season. And if you look at this team, they've not been anything close to hot at any point, with the exception of that 10-game winning streak in December. And really, since December 1st, they're the second lowest scoring team in the NHL. And that's over 46 games. That's a long stretch of games where they just don't score. So there is no evidence at all that this team was even remotely going to get back into this playoff race, even after that Penguins win. But if you want to sit there and say fans should be disappointed about the Devils game, it's fine. You can be disappointed, but I don't think it would have made a difference either way.
Anthony, one quick question for you before we have to head out, because the show is almost wrapped up. The Flyers have finished bottom 10 in the NHL in goal scoring the last 3 seasons. How does that change going forward?
They have to bring in some people. They really do. I mean, I guarantee you the draft that they're going to be looking for offensive players. They really don't have a lot in the way of young offensive talent. I mean, they have the Kerman Rupsov, the Russian kid that they drafted last year that they think is some potential, but they really need to do that. And I think that their targets in free agency have to be on the offensive end. Maybe Hextall can get creative with a trade, but this team is a lot further away now than it was 12 months ago from being a Stanley Cup contender. And I'm not sure that one off season can flip that script around completely. I think they're going to need a couple of them before they really get back to being a contender again.
Anthony, more importantly, when are you coming back to Winnipeg? Because we have a spot for you at the Grove. It's just waiting there.
Oh, man. You know what? Before we go to the Grove, calling me unsurprised that you guys have a sandwich named after you at a deli. Okay?
Yeah.
I have to go. When I come to Winnipeg, I have to get the Illegal Curve sandwich at the deli. I got to see what it is.
We will do that for you. You know that.
Yeah, we're not going to disappoint you.
You know that's a guarantee, old friend. That's a guarantee. Anthony Sanfilippo covers the Flyers for 6:10 a.m. in Philadelphia, and he also covers the entire Philadelphia sports scene. Anthony, thank you.
You got it, guys. Anytime.
Do it again soon. That's it for this Saturday morning in the Illegal Curve Hockey Show here on TSN 1290. Big thank you to our sponsors, Rumors Restaurant and Comedy Club, Linden Market Dental Center, Bernstein's Deli, Zappia Group Realty, and Keener Jerseys. Support these fine Winnipeg companies because they support the Illegal Curve Hockey Show. Big thanks to our guests on today's program, Anthony Sanfilippo, you just heard from him. John Langle, he's the attorney for the U.S. Women's National Hockey Team in their dispute with USA Hockey. That was a great interview. It's on the website, or will be very shortly. Mike Greenlay, Minnesota Wild TV analyst, and Ben Raby, Washington Capitals radio host. You can follow us on Twitter at Illegal Curve, Facebook.com/Illegal Curve, and the website with the latest Winnipeg Jets and Manitoba Moose news is IllegalCurve.com. Big props to producer Rory, doing a great job behind the board as per always. For Dave Minuk, for Ezra Ginsberg, I'm your host, Drew Mandel. If it's Saturday, it's the Illegal Curve Hockey Show on TSN 1290.
As long as we stick together as a team, we'll be all right.